Well, this morning, we are in week two of our series we're calling Storms of Life. Anybody ever lived through a big storm, you know, like a big snowstorm or something like that? Anybody remember the big blizzards of 78, 79? Yeah, you remember those where it snowed like 3 feet and then it went like 20 degrees below zero? I'm probably exaggerating, but I don't think so. It was like that bad. And in Scottsboro where I grew up, they would like cancel school for the week. On Sunday night, they would just say, there'll be no school this week. Right, and my kids love that story, and they're wishing for such an occasion. Or maybe you lived through like the big tornadoes that came through southern Indiana in April of 1973, I think it was. If you were a little bit older, you can remember that. Some of us have lived through storms like that, and we've lived to tell about it. What's the saying? You know, if you've experienced something, you say, "I've been there, done that," and got the t-shirt, right? Some people say that. Well, literally, back a few years ago, we lived in Shelbyville, just outside of Louisville, and back in the fall of 2008, there was a big storm that came through, Hurricane Ike. Anybody remember Hurricane Ike? Normally, around these parts, we don't get too much trouble from hurricanes, but that one actually spawned lots of tornadoes around the Louisville area and lots of flooding, had all kinds of trouble. And then, just in the very early winter part of 2009, there was a big ice storm that kind of shut the city of Louisville and the surrounding area down. And so one of the local TV stations actually printed up shirts that said, "I weathered the storm," and it's got a little Hurricane Ike over here and the ice storm over there. So literally, I've been there, done that, and I got the t-shirt, all right, to show for it. Maybe you've been through some other kinds of storms, and there are other storms that we live through that might not involve snow and rain, but they involve life storms, and they leave things behind besides t-shirts. They might leave scars. They might leave wounds. Those are the kinds of storms that we're talking about here in this series about weathering the storms. Now, today we're talking about weathering family storms, and I think those storms can be among the most difficult to face. I know it's Valentine's Day, and so it might seem like an odd time to talk about family storms. And if on Valentine's Day everything is great at your house and everything's, you know, candlelight and roses and 4-foot teddy bears and, you know, lacy lingerie, then more power to you, all right? Keep on keeping on and continue on. But if there's something that's not exactly right, if things aren't exactly perfect at your house, then hopefully what we can talk about today will help us when we are weathering those kinds of storms. Like I said, I think family storms are among the most difficult to withstand because, you know, when family is right, I mean, the marriage is a wonderful thing. Amen? Yeah. Men, this is your time. Yes, if you're sitting next to your wife. All right, it's a wonderful thing when things are going right. But when things are going wrong, all right, there's not much worse, right? When things are going right at home, you can withstand almost anything else, can't you? I mean, if things are good at home, if everything's good, then it doesn't really matter what the world throws at you. You can kind of survive it, and you can kind of get past it. On the other hand, you know, what's the saying? If mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy? Well, it's true for papa too, right? If papa ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. If the family is not happy, ain't nobody happy. It doesn't matter what else good is going on and how good your job might be going or how good financially things are. If things aren't good at home, doesn't really matter. Family is such an important thing. That's why family storms are so difficult. I mean, why is it that we seem to hurt most the people that are the closest to us? Have you ever noticed that? One reason I think it's so hard in families is because families know us, right? I mean, they know the real us. It's hard to hide them. You know, we can hide the real us and the real stuff when we come here to church, when we put on a happy face. I mean, how many of you, you know, have ever driven to church and, you know, had an argument? Anybody? Right? But then you come in and everything's fine at church. But you find yourself just, you know, you're coming to worship Jesus and you find yourself with your hands around the neck of a small person that you say you love, right? Or, you know, you've got this incredible argument with your, you know, your spouse. Rhonda and I never argue on the way to church. We drive separate. And it's a great tool, you know. That's for free, you know. Some of you might want to do that, but we never argue on the way to church. And we do argue sometimes. Inevitably, those arguments end when one of us says, "I'm sorry, Rhonda," you know, and then we can go on. But marriage and family and the storms—they're difficult. They're hard for us to weather, and that's what we're going to talk about. Now, as I was thinking about this week, I came across this illustration, and I haven't been able to confirm it, but I'm told that that kind of marriage and family struggles, it's kind of the difference between wild horses and wild donkeys. All right? Now, I'm told that when wild horses get attacked by wolves, right, that they come together, they put their heads together so that then they can kick the stuffings out of the wolves, right? But I'm also told that wild donkeys, on the other hand, when the wolves surround them, they back up to one another so they can see the danger, and then when they get attacked, they kick the stuffings out of each other, all right? And so I was thinking about that. I thought, in our family storms, all right, let's be more like horses and less like donkeys, all right? So you can say, you know, guess what the preacher said? You should not act like a donkey, all right? But we should be more like horses coming together, fighting the storms together, the things that come to attack us, rather than attacking and turning inside and kicking the stuffings out of each other. So as we think about that today, we'll try to be more like horses and less like donkeys. Now, when we're thinking about weathering family storms, I mean, like I said, the biblical picture of marriage and family is just a wonderful thing. When things are working great, there's nothing better. And Jesus told us how to kind of build a home, build a house that would weather storms. It was in one of the first sermons that he ever gave in Matthew chapter 7. This is what he said. He said, "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who builds his house on the rock. The rains came down, the streams rose, the wind blew." In other words, the storms came and beat against that house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. "But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, the wind blew, the storms came and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash." Jesus says the key to withstanding and to weathering family storms is to build our house, to build our family on a firm foundation, on the Word of God, on His Word, not just knowing it, but applying it and putting it into practice into our marriages, into our families, and that's how we can withstand family storms. And so, today we're going to take a look at a small piece of God's Word and to see some practical instructions that's given us. We're going to look in 1 Peter chapter 3. So if you've got your Bible, you can turn to 1 Peter chapter 3. If you don't have a Bible, there should be one in a chair in front of you somewhere nearby. It's on page 1178 if you've got one of those Bibles in front of you. But we're going to be looking at some instructions that Peter gives to families on how to withstand storms when they come up. And these instructions will not only help us weather storms or to help us calm storms if we find ourselves already in the middle of one, but if we put them into place, it actually might help us to avoid storms altogether in the future. Now, they're difficult. Okay, what we're going to look at is kind of politically incorrect a little bit. Some of you may want to push back against some of it, and that's all right. But remember, instructions are given to us about things that don't come naturally. I mean, think about it. If things came naturally to us, we wouldn't need instructions on it, right? We would just normally do it. And so these instructions that Peter gives to households to kind of weather storms and to survive when the things go bad or avoid bad things happening in the first place, they might be difficult because they don't come naturally to us. It was G.K. Chesterton who said that Christianity hasn't been tried and found wanting. It's been found difficult and not tried. And I think some of the advice that Peter gives us about marriages and families are kind of that same way. It seems difficult, or it seems not like what our culture would say. It seems politically incorrect. Maybe it seems against our 2016 sensibilities, and so we don't give it a try. But every time it's tried, it works because God's instructions do work. Now, Peter gives these instructions to three separate groups of people, and we're going to take them in the order that he goes. He gives one set of instructions to wives. Any wives out there? Raise your hand, wives. All right? He gives another set of instructions to husbands. All right? And then he gives a third set of instructions to everyone, if you're an everyone. Okay, so there's something here for everybody today. And these were written to Christians, okay, so that's important to know, but it's also important to know that these instructions will work for anybody. So if you're not a Christian, or you haven't decided to become a follower of Jesus yet, you can try these at home, and it's okay, and they will actually work. So we'll dive in here to these instructions that Peter gives in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 1. Again, we start with the wives. Wives, where are you? All right, wives, this is for you. Wives, in the same way, submit yourselves to your own husbands so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behavior of their wives when they see the purity and reverence of your lives. All right? Now we're already in trouble, I know, all right? Because we said the S word, all right? Submit. But before we hit that one, let's go back to the three words before that. What does it say? In the same way. Well, in the same way as what? If you go back the few verses before, it's in the same way as Jesus. Okay? So Peter is saying, wives, in the same way that Jesus submitted his will to God the Father and was submissive to death on the cross, in the same way, wives, you should submit your will to your husband. Now, that helped maybe a little bit, but it probably didn't help all the way. So let's go further. All right. The word here, when it talks about submitting, it's really the whole idea of respecting the design that God has put in place. Okay. God is a God of design. He's a God of order. Why he did things the way he did, I don't know. You can ask him when we get there. We can all learn together. But the reality is that God put an order to things. He put an order to the universe. And the order that he put for families is that the husband was to be the head, is how the Bible calls it, the head of the household. What that means primarily is that the husband has the greater responsibility. The husband has the greater accountability to God. And so, Peter says, wives, submit, respect the design that God has put in place and the position of responsibility that your husband is in, particularly if your husband is not a believer. Now, theoretically, if the husband is a believer, then everything is easy, okay? And we're going to find that out just in a little bit when we see what the husbands are supposed to do. But wives, if you're married to a Christian, it's supposed to be easy. Right. We don't do it very good, but if we did it right, it would be easy, okay? But Peter here addresses women who are married to unbelievers. Could that be a cause of storm in people's lives, in people's relationships? So many storms at home are caused when one or the other spouse doesn't believe, is not a believer, and so they have different perspectives that they're coming at. And Peter says, wives, even if, maybe especially if, your husband is not a believer, submit to him anyway, not out of respect for him, out of respect for the design that God has. Ephesians 5:21 says that we are husbands and wives to submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Not out of reverence for our husband or our wife. They might not be what you would call someone who is worthy, whatever that means, of respect. But Peter says, respect them anyway because of the design that God has. Is that difficult? Yes. But the question is, do we want God's best for our family? Now, you say, but my husband doesn't believe. I have to make him believe. I have to try to change him. And Peter gives us a recipe for that. He said, so that, submit yourself to your own husband, so that if any of them don't believe the word, they may be won over. What's the next two words? Without words. So many women try to make changes with words, right? They try to change their husband with words. Husbands call that nagging, right? That's kind of the man word for that, all right? Peter says, wives, listen, if you really want good things to happen in your marriage, focus on your inner self. Focus on becoming the most godly woman you can be. In that way, you can win your husband without words when he sees your godly life, when he sees the change that God has made in your life, when he feels the respect. There's something weird about respect. God has just designed men to crave and need respect, particularly from their wife. And wives, if you don't give your husband respect, whether or not he deserves it, nothing's going to be right. Things are not going to be smooth at your house. There's just something about respect for a man. And so it might not come natural, especially if the man doesn't seem worthy of that respect. And so Peter gives these instructions and says, wives, even if your husband is not a believer, even if it doesn't seem like he deserves your respect, if you want things to go well at home, if you want things to go better, if you want things to go smoother, if you want to avoid some of those storms, submit to your husband, again, out of reverence to Christ. He goes on and says in verse 3, your beauty, and that's an interesting word that he uses. That word that's translated beauty is actually the word in Greek cosmos. You've heard of the word cosmos, right? It's saying, women, don't let your world be wrapped up in your external appearance. There's nothing wrong with looking nice on the outside. And in fact, we encourage that. But it says that your world shouldn't be wrapped up in outward adornment, such as elaborate hairstyles and the wearing of gold jewelry or fine clothes. Rather, your world, your worth, your sense of self worth should come from that of your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. Peter says, women, if you want things to go better at your house, respect your husbands out of love and respect for God, and make sure that you are focusing on yourself to make you the most godly woman that you can. He said, that's how, verse 5 and 6 sound a little weird to our ears today. He says, for this is the way, in other words, making yourself as godly as possible. This is the way the holy women of the past, who put their hope in God, used to adorn themselves. They submitted themselves to their own husbands, like Sarah, who obeyed Abraham and called him her, what's the word? Lord. Lord, you are her daughters if you do what is right and you do not give way to fear. Now, I don't know what the problem is. Rhonda calls me Lord all the time. I mean, it's just like, yes, Lord, yes, Master. Yeah, right. I can't help but think of, I dream of Jeannie. If you remember old Jeannie, you know, yes, Master, and she would do whatever. That's not what this means, all right? It's not, this is just a term of respect, all right? It's just saying Sarah and all godly women respected their husbands and treated them with respect. That's all this is saying. It's not calling them the grand poobah of the world, not saying, yes, your royal majesty. It's nothing like that at all. Although, wives, we would love to hear that just every once in a while, you know, just like on our birthday or something, you could throw one of those in just for fun. But that's not what this is talking about, all right? This is just a term of respect. And then he says, you are her daughters if you do what is right and do not give way to fear. Ladies, I'm not a lady, never have been, so I have no experience in this regard, okay? But I can imagine that this idea of submitting to your husband, particularly if he has not submitted himself to God, is a very scary thing for you. The questions we talked about last week, you know, when fear comes, it's the bad fear. It asks questions like, yeah, but what about this? What about that? If I do this, what if this? And of course, it should go without saying, we're not talking about undergoing any kind of abuse or anything like that, of, you know, physical abuse or mental, anything like that. And we're not talking about that. We're just talking about submitting and respecting the design and the role that God has placed both the husband and the wife in. And he said, you are holy women if you do this and do not give way to fear. Let God take care of those fears as you submit to him. So women, to have a calmer family life, focus on living a godly life, focus on having your beauty come from within. And if you're married, that begins with respecting your husband. Not again because he's great or even worthy of respect, but because of your respect for God and his design. All right? That's the instructions to women. All right? Difficult, okay? But if we want to have a smoother home life, this is what Peter says. Now, we move on to the men. How many are ready to move on to the women? Men. All the women said, yes, quickly, move on, please. All right. Husbands, verse 7. Husbands, raise your hand. Where are you? All right, husbands, this is for you. In the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives and treat them with respect as the weaker partner and as heirs with you of the gracious gift of life so that nothing will hinder your prayers. Now, we're not going to take this verse exactly as it comes because we're going to first address the giant elephant that's right in the middle of that verse. Maybe you saw it. Ladies, did you see it? Okay. If not, maybe this will help. Right? Did you see the elephant there? Okay. Some of you are like, weaker partner. I'll give you weaker. Yeah, I just felt you. You were rising up in your seat and you're like, I'll show you weaker partner. All right. Well, let's explain this one a little bit. Okay. So we can get past it and see what the teaching really says. The New Testament, as we've talked about before, is written in Greek, and usually our English translations do an excellent job of getting us the flavor of exactly what was being said. This is one of those times where the translation is correct, but it doesn't give us the nuance, okay? Ladies, would it help you to know that the Greek phrase translated weaker partner could also be translated delicate vessel? Does that sound a little bit better? It could also be translated fine china. Ooh. That sounds different. It's really the difference between Corel and fine china. Now, you guys, you know what Corel is, right? This is what you get at the Walmart or the Target. You can do anything to this. I mean, you can drop it. You can throw it down. It won't. You can do anything. This is the everyday, ordinary stuff, right? Nothing happens to this. On the other hand, this is china. This is a plate that we got for our wedding. I think we've used it like once. You know, it's the special stuff. Right? It's delicate. You would never think of dropping it. Because why? No, it's too valuable. It's something to be cherished. It's something to be protected. It's something to be given a place of honor. What do we do with a lot of this? We buy a special piece of furniture in our house so that people can see it. They can come over and go, ooh, look how pretty that is. Look how nice that is. And that's the picture, guys, of what Peter is saying of how we should think of our wives. They're not the everyday, ordinary stuff. They're not one of the guys, right? They're not somebody that you treat with disrespect. They're not someone that you throw down. They're not someone that you're cruel or abusive to in any way. No, our wives are a delicate vessel. They're fine china. They're something to be cherished. They're something to be honored. They're something to be revered almost and put in a very special place as that we can show everybody the beauty that is our wife. Now, wives, would it be okay if your husband treated you as a piece of fine china? Is that all right with you? Okay, that husbands, men, guys who are dating, that is the way a Christian man is supposed to treat his wife or his woman, as a piece of fine china. All right? So let's go on and see what actually Paul is saying to the men, now that we know how we're supposed to treat our ladies, our delicate vessel that he has given to us. Look and see what he says in verse 7. It says, husbands, in the same way, again, the same way as what? In the same way as Christ, okay? Your attitude also should be the same as Christ. And in the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives, and again, treating them as this fine china. Now, another translation there, what does this be considerate mean, all right? Another way to say that is, husbands should live with your wives in an understanding way. Or another translation says, husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge. Or give thought to the way you live with your wives, all right? Husbands, we are supposed to give thought. We're supposed to think about how we live with our wives. We're supposed to think about how we can cherish them. We're supposed to think about how we live with them. To do it according to knowledge in an understanding, considerate way. And sometimes that's easier said than done. Would you agree? Right? Sometimes it's just difficult to know. I heard about the story of a guy who was riding his motorcycle down the beach in California one evening, and all of a sudden the skies kind of parted, and in a booming voice, you know, God spoke to him and said, "Because you have been faithful to me all these years, I would like to grant you a wish." And so the man thought about that for a minute, and he said, "Oh, that would be awesome. I would love a bridge from here all the way to Hawaii so I could ride my motorcycle to Hawaii anytime I wanted to." And God said, "Well, I mean, I'm God. I could do that, but that just seems like a pretty materialistic, selfish kind of a request. I mean, think of all the resources, all the concrete, all the steel, everything that would be used that would have to... Can't you think of something that would be, you know, more beneficial for mankind and something that would be a little less selfish?" So the man thought about it for a little bit, and he said, "I've got it. I would like for me and all men everywhere to be able to understand women, to know what they're thinking, to know what they mean when they're giving me the silent treatment, to know why they sometimes burst into tears when I try to help, to understand what it's really like, what they really want, and how to make a woman happy." To which God replied, "You want two lanes or four on that bridge?" Okay, that's terrible. But the idea, the reality is, it's difficult, isn't it, guys? I mean, the reason it's so difficult, or one of the reasons, maybe the primary reason, is just because men and women are so different. Have you noticed that? Right? What was the book that was said, you know, men are from Mars and women are from Venus? Well, how far is that apart? It's a long way. I looked it up, all right? Depending on the orbits, between 35 million and 222 million miles apart. That sounds about right, don't you think? I mean, sometimes it seems like men and women are that far apart. We're just different creatures. Yeah, I saw a Time magazine cover several years ago that was promoting this big, you know, governmental study that proved, after millions of dollars, that men and women were different. And I'm thinking, do we really need a government study, you know, to prove this? In other news, the sun will come up in the east. I mean, it's like, it should be so obvious to us that men and women are different. But guys, we can't just say, "Well, men and women are different. It's too hard. I can't do it." No, we are commanded to live with our wives in a considerate way, according to thought, according to knowledge, that we're to give thought to how we live with this beautiful, magnificent, mysterious creature that God has given to us called a woman. Right? And so we, as men, our job from God is to study, take a crash course on our wives, be a lifelong learner about our wives. What is it that makes her tick? Why does she think the way she does? If you don't know, here's a clue. ask her. She might tell you, right? After she passes out, but when she comes to, then you can have a nice conversation. Men, we are to live with our wives in an understanding way, in a considerate way. Why is that? He says, because we are spiritual heirs together. Again, this proves once and for all that it's not a value thing. It's not a worth thing. It's not that husbands are worth more or more valuable to in God's sight than wives. It has nothing to do with that. Again, it's just his design for order in the house. And Peter says, because you're both spiritual heirs together. From God's perspective, you're exactly the same. Christ died for both of you equally. And so this is why you have to treat them as fine china. This is why we have to live in an understanding way with them. And then he says, so that nothing will hinder your prayers. In other words, guys, God says, through his spokesperson Peter, that if we mistreat our wives, right, if we treat them like the regular everyday stuff instead of the fine china, that spiritually we are going to be damaged, that God will not hear our prayers in the same way. Now, that's a pretty serious thing. God says, if you want a good pathway between me and you, guys, make sure there's a good pathway between you and your wife. Make sure you're treating her with the respect and the attention and that you're cherishing her in the way that you should. And then nothing will hinder your prayers when you come to me. That's some powerful stuff. So, women, he says, here, if you want the storms of life to not visit your house as much, or when they do, that you can calm them, respect your husband, even if it doesn't make sense to you, out of respect for God. Do everything you can to be a godly woman. Husbands, treat your wives like they're fine china. Do everything you can to study them and learn about them so you can live with them in an understanding way. And then Peter concludes with a flurry, really, of just practical, general information for all of us to help us in our relationships, right? Particularly family relationships that we're talking about now, but really they work in all different relationships as well. So, husbands, wives, all of you, if you're one of those, raise your hands. That's all of us, all right? Let's take a look and see what he says as we finish. He says, finally, verse 8, all of you be like-minded. That simply means have a good attitude. The word means to be harmonious, all right? To think harmonious thoughts, all right? So be like-minded, be sympathetic. What does it mean to be sympathetic? Literally, it means to suffer with or to feel with or to share in the feelings or the sufferings of others, right? It's to put ourselves in their place. If you're having a struggle with someone in your family, God says a great idea is to put yourself in their place, to see how they're thinking about things, to see how they might be experiencing things. Parents, put yourself in your kid's spot. How does what's happening affect them? How does it see them? Same kids, try to put yourself in your parents, husbands and wives. Put yourself in the other person's place. It was the great theologian Steve Martin who said, before you criticize a man, you should walk a mile in his shoes. That way, when you do criticize a man, you'll be a mile away and you'll have his shoes. All right? So that's good advice, right? That's kind of, that's being sympathetic, right? To first put yourself in another person's spot, to walk a mile in their shoes. That will help alleviate many of the storms that come. So be like-minded, be sympathetic. Then it says to love one another. That's kind of a catch-all. It's the word for brotherly family kind of a love that we have for those closest to us. It says be compassionate. That means to be kind-hearted, to be tender-hearted. It's a word that means an emotion that wells up from the very insides of us. That's the deep emotional bond, the feelings that we should have toward those people in our family. Be like-minded, sympathetic, love one another, be compassionate and humble. What is being humble? What is humility? Being humble is simply recognizing who God is and then recognizing who we are in comparison. Right, that's what humility is. It's understanding who God is and who we are in its place. If we can do that, it will help greatly in our family relationships because it helps to put things in perspective. Right? When we remember how much God has forgiven of us, it makes it easier for us to minimize what our family members have done against us. Being humble, putting ourselves in their spot, remembering who we are compared to who God is, will help keep things in perspective in our family relationships. And then he goes to the thing that may be the key, maybe the biggest practical thing that you can take away from here if you want things to go better and smoother at home, no matter what the state of your family relationship is. He says this, verse 9, do not repay evil with evil or insult with insult. If we could just do that one, Right? Wouldn't things be so much better at home? You know, our husband smarts off to us, and wives, you've got used to, oh, all right, if he says that one more time, I'm going to nail him. I've got the perfect comeback. Right? Or guys, you know, we pride ourselves on our sarcastic wit, you know, and we think it's a spiritual gift, but it's not. You know, and so our wife says something, and we're ready for a comeback, and we snap at him. And it never helps. And it always hurts. And it always takes things in the wrong direction and not the right direction. And if you want life to go better at home and life to go better in your relationships, don't repay evil for evil or insult for insult. Even if you've got the great comeback, just swallow it. I was reminded of the couple that had just had one of those fights as they're driving down through the countryside in the car, and neither one wanted to concede their position, so they're both kind of clammed up and giving each other the silent treatment. When they finally passed a barnyard full of goats and pigs, and the man looked at the woman and said, "Relatives of yours?" Without missing a beat, she said, "Yep, in-laws." See, no, you're not supposed to say stuff like that. See, even though it was a good comeback, that's the kind of stuff you're not supposed to say if you want things to go well in your family, if you want to withstand, to calm, and even avoid family storms. Peter says, do not repay evil for evil or insult with insult. That's difficult because every part of us wants to put them in our place. They've shot at us, so we want to shoot back. And he says, no. If you want to live a life more calmly at home, don't do that. He says, on the contrary, repay evil with blessing, because to this you were called, so that you may inherit a blessing. What does that mean, to repay with blessing? Well, it may mean just to simply pray for that person. Instead of giving back a zinger, pray to God for him or for you in that moment, right? To pray for them. It may be to actually say something nice about them in front of them to someone else, to bless them in front of someone else. If they've been cruel to you and yet you can turn around and say something kind in return, that can do all kinds of things to change the tenor of the event that's happening right there. Don't repay evil for evil or insult with insult. Instead, on the contrary, repay evil with blessing, because to that we were called. Then Peter kind of concludes everything here in verses 10 through 13. He says this, "For whoever would love life and see good days." Anybody want to do that? Anybody want to love life and see good days? You want to, like, love life at your household? See good days in your family? Okay, here's what he says. He's kind of given this conclusion. He's actually quoting from the psalm that was written hundreds of years earlier. He said, "Whoever would love life and see good days must keep their tongue from evil and their lips from deceitful speech." Isn't it true that if we could just shut up sometimes, we would help things go a lot smoother in our family? If we could just keep our big fat mouth shut? Peter says, if you want to live life, if you want to have a good life, if you want things to go well for you and your family, learn to keep your mouth closed. Keep your lips from deceitful speech. It's those exaggerations that we're always prone to do in the heat of the moment. You never. Are those true? No, those are exaggerations. Those are what Peter calls deceitful speech. He says, knock it out. Quit it. Don't do it. Don't repay evil for evil or insult by insult. Just keep your mouth closed if you want to see good life. And he says, verse 11, "They must turn from evil and do good. They must seek peace and pursue it." We're to be seekers of peace in our relationships. "For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are attentive to their prayer. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. Who," verse 13, "is going to harm you if you are eager to do good? But even if you should suffer for what is right, you are blessed." All right, Peter kind of boils it all down. He says this, all right, if you follow these instructions, wives, if you are respectful to your husband, even if it doesn't seem like it, and if you're doing everything you can to make yourself godly, and husbands, if you'll treat your wife like fine china, and you'll study her, and you'll go to school on her, and you'll live in a considerate way, and everyone, if you'll live life like this, and you'll not repay insult for insult, then most likely things are going to go well for you. He says, who would do bad to someone who's acting that way? Who would act in a bad way toward that? The answer is, well, you don't know who I live with, all right? There's always that exception. And so he says, but even if not, even if things at your home don't go smoothly because of this, God will see what you've done. He will see that you're honoring his instruction and his design, and he will bless you. Friends, that's what, as a Christian, isn't that our goal, is to live a life that God can bless? And ideally, in a perfect world, it will make things better in our household. And 99 times out of 100, it will. If you put these instructions into work, into place in your life, it will improve your family storms. It will help you avoid them or make them less volatile when they come up. But even if not, God says, I see, I'm watching, and I will bless you. He's given us the instructions. They're difficult to follow, but that's why he's given us the instructions, because they don't come natural. Will you be courageous enough to say, God, I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to do it your way, even though it doesn't make sense to me. I'm going to live a life that you can bless. Would you pray with me? God, thank you so much for giving us your instructions on how to live holy lives, on how to do family the way you designed for. And God, this morning, I just pray right now for the wife who lives with a husband who doesn't believe in you, who does not treat her like a delicate vessel. God, I pray that you would give her the courage and the strength to submit to him and respect him anyway because of her love for you. And that she would have the courage to just do everything that she can without words to make her life so godly that it will get his attention, and that you will be able to get his attention through that. God, I pray for the husband who is trying his best but who lives with an overbearing wife who doesn't, it's hard for him to understand that she is a piece of fine china when she's screaming and when she's yelling and when she's disrespecting. God, I pray that you would give him the courage, that in the same way that Jesus submitted, that he would submit his desires and that he would treat her the way you have called him to, as a delicate vessel, as a piece of fine china. And God, for all of us, that you would help us in the heat of the moment to bite our tongues, to not return evil for evil, but to be humble and to realize who you are and who we are, so that we can love people in our lives in spite of their weakness, just as you love us in spite of our weakness. God, that's our prayer in Jesus' name. Amen.